Good morning. It's 8:06. You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. I'm Parker Malatesta, filling in for Leslie Thatcher on this Thursday, June 19th, which marks the federal Juneteenth holiday. It was on June 19th, 1865, that Union troops freed enslaved African Americans in Galveston Bay and across Texas, some 2.5 years after President Abraham Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation. It's going to be a hot one today in the Wasatch Back, but before we get to the weather, I want to hit on a traffic update. Westbound I-80, right near Silver Creek Junction there, just east of Kimball Junction, is completely shut down right now due to a hazmat crash. The Utah Department of Transportation says that drivers should try to use an alternate route like US 189 or I-84 and should avoid the location entirely. The estimated reopening of that area is around noon. Once again, that is at Silver Creek Junction, westbound I-80, just east of Kimball Junction. It is completely shut down due to a hazmat crash, and the estimated reopening is around noon. Well, like I said, it's going to be a hot one today. To talk more about the weather, I'm going to kick it off to ABC4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Happy Thursday, KPCW listeners. It's Juneteenth, and it's time for your forecast for the Wasatch Back. As we go into your Thursday afternoon, it is going to be a scorcher of a day. We're looking at high temperatures climbing into the lower 90s in Park City with lots of sunshine. Again, it is going to be quite hot this afternoon, so make sure you're staying hydrated. Heber Valley, we're looking at temperatures in the mid to upper 90s for daytime highs today. So, yeah, it is definitely going to be one of the hottest days of the year heading our way. Now, as we go into your Friday, we're looking at lots of sunshine, temperatures still climbing into the mid-80s for Park City for a high temperature. And for the Heber Valley, we'll be looking at that sunshine with high temperatures climbing into the lower 90s. Again, another very warm end to the week and first official day of summer starting off on a hot note. Now, as we head into the weekend, we've got big changes on the way. We're tracking a pattern change heading your way with lots of sunshine. But notice as we get into your Saturday, high temperatures will only be in the mid-70s for us in the Park City area. As you get into the Heber Valley, we're talking high temperatures dropping down only into the lower 80s for highs, but it gets even cooler. How about Sunday morning? We're talking temperatures dipping down into the 30s, both in Park City and in the Heber Valley. So it is going to be downright cold as we kick off our Sunday morning. And high temperatures on your Sunday afternoon, only in the mid to upper 60s in Park City. Yeah, only mid to upper 60s with highs only in the low 70s for the Heber Valley. We're talking about a big change heading our way between the end of this week heading into the end of the weekend. Now, as we go into next week, we will see that sunshine sticking around with mainly dry conditions. We could have temperatures flirting with the freezing mark, at least low to mid-30s for lows, heading into Monday morning in the Heber Valley with mid to upper 30s for Park City. But we do start to rebound a little bit with highs back in the mid-70s in Park City by the time we get towards your Monday afternoon with highs in the low 80s in the Heber Valley. And we're back into the low 80s in Park City and highs in the mid to upper 80s in the Heber Valley by the middle of next week. That's your latest forecast from the ABC Forecast Center. I'm meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
With an update on the local trails on the line with me, I have Mountain Trails Executive Director Laura Anthony. How's it going, Laura?
Good morning and happy Thursday, Park City. We have got quite the trails report, so I'll try to talk fast and be efficient here. Looks like Dave from Basin Rec is reporting in that all basin trails are good to go, except for the Discovery Ridge trails will be closed Friday through Sunday as Rocky Mountain Power continues with utility line work in that area. The lines are on the ground, they're saying, but they're not active. But due to the equipment and wire crossings, the trails, the entire area of Discovery Ridge is closed. So please obey those closures. It could be dangerous out there with the machinery and lines on the ground. Looks like these trails include the Up Trail, Arsalan, Dead Reckoning, Pale Green Dot, Toll New World, and Discovery Hiking Loop. Also, they're reporting that the start of summer color run at Willow Creek Park is on Saturday from 8:30 to 11 a.m. The event is free. Registration is encouraged. There is a 5K, 1 mile, 100-yard dash, and a whole lot of colorful chalk. Excuse me. Joe from Park City Municipal is reporting that the Bonanza Flat trails are good to go. They cleared the trail up into Lackawaxen Lake yesterday, and looks like everything is great, holding very little snow. Reminder that while we do love our dogs here in Park City, Bloods Lake is not a dog-friendly lake. You cannot let your dogs in the lake at Bloods Lake. You can walk up to the lake, but do not let your dogs in the lake. It is a source of water for the camp, the Girl Scout camp just downstream. If you want to head up to Lackawaxen Lake, that is a dog-friendly lake. Reminder also that Bonanza Loop Trail is the 5-mile multi-use trail. It's closed until July 1st. That's just to give the animals some time to raise their young and get out of the area. So please respect that closure and give the wildlife a bit of space and some time. Let's see. Alec from my crew is saying that we've got users are advised. Okay, yeah, we've got a huge trail impact alert from the first time lot. There will be heavy construction on the Winter Terrain Park. Lower Jennies, Lower Seldom Seen, and First Time Return are all closed. Silver Spur to Spiro Armstrong remains open. Bikers descending Seldom Seen will need to climb up about 0.2 miles to exit on Lower CMG. So you'll have to take, if you're on Seldom Seen, that's great, but you will have to exit Seldom Seen and then go up to Jennies about 0.2 miles there. There will be signage in place, so please obey the signage. Again, folks, we cannot express how important it is to not go around closures. Hikers will need to avoid mid-Jennies and CMG trails. We're recommending alternative hiking routes. Mother Urban, of course, Sweeney's John, Spiro, Armstrong, and Don's. We have 400 miles of trail out there, folks, so feel free to go explore a different area. First time lot is just not the place to start your hike or ride from. Also, due to maintenance on the King Con lift, this weekend next, expect impacts to Mid-Mountain, where it crosses underneath the King Con lift. Park City Mountain has installed signage. Again, obey the signage, please. And last, we've got a trail on the CMG trail, very near the Eagle split off. There is a machine sitting there. Apologies for the inconvenience, but we are doing a major overhaul of CMG, and the machinery needs to stay there for a couple more days. Last, we've got Wasatch Trails reporting in that all trails in Heber are good to go. Midweek mountain bike cross-country relay race is at the Jordan L. Ridge Trail System behind UVU from 11 a.m. or from midnight to 11 a.m. on Friday. So I guess that's Friday into Saturday. And then we've got a dig day with Mountain Trails. Meet at the Bonanza Flat Trailhead, 8 a.m. on Tuesday morning. Love some help. We're building a new trail between Iowa and Mid Mountain. And tomorrow we will be doing a moonshine adventure from 7:30 to 9 p.m. Hot dogs, refreshments at the Gate to Nowhere. It's kind of the high point in Round Valley. And we'd love to see folks out there just celebrating the summer solstice. So that's it. Have a great week, and we will see you out there.
All right. Thanks so much, Laura.
Thanks. Bye.
Coming up, we'll be speaking with Utah Rep. Sandra Holland. She'll share her work to pass the bill that took slavery off the Utah Constitution in 2019. Then Park City School District officials will give an update on the recently approved budget and policy changes. And we'll end the hour with the Executive Director of the Park City Sailing Association, Scott Vermaris. He'll have details on the annual Summer Sailstice event on Saturday. After that, stay tuned for Cool Science Radio at 9. Writer Richard Simon joins the show to talk about his year of going smartphone free in his book, Unplug, How to Break Up with Your Phone and Reclaim Your Life. Then Professor Paul Brooks from the University of Utah's Geology and Geophysics Department talks about the long journey snowmelt takes from as groundwater before it leaves the Utah mountains. Board members for Basin Recreation say they want more information about cemetery planners before they take a vote that could allow or block the graveyard near the gateway to the Utah Olympic Park. KPCW's Connor Thomas explains.
The Snyderville Basin controversy started in the spring when the Cemetery District's board moved to subdivide its preferred site. The land is county-owned open space on the right side of Olympic Parkway on the way up to UOP. Dozens of residents wrote in or spoke at May's Basin Recreation Board meeting against the idea. They raised concerns about moving Basin Rec's trails to accommodate graves, removing deed restrictions on the land that prohibit subdivision, as well as affecting the overall character of the site. Then, at a June 12th meeting, Basin Rec Board Vice Chair Ryan Bruce answered those concerns with news that Basin Rec's board is tabling the issue indefinitely.
Based on significant public interest and concerns raised, we believe that either a new proposed location or substantially more detail specifically regarding the site plan, intended use, and legal considerations is necessary before any further action can be reasonably considered. In good faith, two members of our board are now actively engaged in discussions with the cemetery district. We remain open to revisiting this request in the future should more specific and comprehensive information become available.
Cemetery district board members say they need to subdivide the land because Utah law prefers graveyards that are separate legally defined parcels. The board needs 13 signatures from entities with a vested interest in the property, and Basin Rec was the 12th. Without the rec district's go-ahead, the cemetery planners will likely need to find another site. The cemetery district announced it preferred the Olympic Parkway site 1 year ago after testing the soil at multiple other county-owned parcels. A Google form launched in the spring of 2024 to accept public input about what a future cemetery should look like is still open. The Sandoval Basin does not currently have a public cemetery, and Park Cities is at capacity. That means residents must look elsewhere for a final resting place. Basin Recreation is a financial supporter of KPCW. I'm Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
I'm now joined over the phone by Utah State Representative Sandra Holland. She's a Democrat representing Salt Lake City. How's it going this morning?
I am doing wonderful. Happy Juneteenth.
Happy Juneteenth. Well, we normally talk to state lawmakers, but mostly in our neck of the woods. Sandra, would you mind just sort of introducing yourself and telling us a bit about your background?
Sure. I am Sandra Hollins. I represent the wonderful District 21. I was elected to office in 2014, being sworn in 2015, and have been serving the people of Utah since then. A lot of my background has been in social work. I'm still a licensed clinical social worker, although I don't work in the field, but keep my license very active. That is my background, working with those who are in poverty, working with the homeless population, and doing therapy and in substance abuse and trauma.
Yeah, well, just in light of the holiday today, we wanted to talk about some of your past work that was frankly news to me because I wasn't around the state at this time. You led an effort around 2019, I believe, to remove slavery from the Utah Constitution. And I guess to start with that, I really wanted to, you know, can you kind of explain how slavery made its way into the Utah Constitution and how it ended up, you know, staying in it for so long?
Yeah, sure. So in 2019, well, it was around 2018, I had been watching what was happening in Colorado. Colorado had it on its ballot, and I believe the first time it failed and the second time it passed. And so I had been watching their effort to get this taken out of their state constitution, not knowing that it was in Utah's constitution. It never dawned on me to look to see if it was in our constitution. Mm-hmm. It was one night when I had a reporter who actually called me late one night when I actually was still up working, and she wanted to know if I was aware that it was in Utah's constitution. And I was like, that's absolutely wrong. It can't be. And so she said, well, I'm sending the information over to you now. And I looked at it, and she was like, well, what are you going to do? And I said, well, I have no other choice. I know this is in there. I have to remove it. And so then I set out to remove it, which resulted in HJR 8, which was Amendment C on the ballot in 2020. And so the reason why it was in there, it mirrored Amendment 13, the 13th Amendment, which abolished slavery, but still had language in there related to slavery.
Mm-hmm.
And when I started researching it, there was a lot of reasons why states chose to keep this language in. A lot of it was around economic reasons. A lot of it was around there were individuals who were not willing, who were resistant to change. You know, out of this came the Black Codes. As far as Utah, the only thing, after doing some research, the only thing we can think of was that Utah was still becoming a state, and they were still writing their constitution. And so they were, because they wanted to be become a state, that they mirrored what was in the U.S. Constitution. And so they put this provision in the in their constitution, like many states did, to mirror the U.S. The U.S. Constitution.
Mm-hmm. At the time, did you receive any pushback?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There's always pushback. I did receive some, you know, it passed by 80%, so there was still that 10% that refused to vote for it. But I received emails from individuals who felt that this was like the monument that, you know, that was being taken down, that was a memorial to slavery, and that we shouldn't be messing with the Utah Constitution. There was people who felt that there was no need to take this down, that it meant nothing. But for those who ancestors were affected by it, it meant everything to them. And so, yes, I did receive emails. I did receive some pushback on it. But the amount of support I received in favor of it was overwhelming. It was overwhelming. And people came on board and different organizations came on board and totally supported legislators. It was a bipartisan effort. You know, it was carried in the Senate by former Senator Jake Andrix. And so it was a bipartisan effort to get this taken out, and more people realized that it was time that it come out of our Utah Constitution.
Yeah, and turning to Juneteenth, a relatively new federal and state holiday, what does this day mean to you?
Oh, my gosh, this day, to me, in light of everything that is happening right now, is a time for us as a community to come together and to celebrate our history. We know we have the United States has a controversial history, and it's not pretty. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not a pretty history, but it's not one to be ignored. And so this is a time for us to come together to celebrate, to look at our past, but to also celebrate where we are and where we're going as a community. And so I love Juneteenth. I love the Juneteenth holiday and what it means and the opportunities I have to get out into the community and actually interact and talk with people and network with people. So it's a wonderful, wonderful day.
And I believe you also led the efforts, I think it was around 2022, to make Juneteenth a state holiday. Is that correct?
Yes. And, yes, I did.
And I believe you were trying to make some changes to that heading into the legislative session earlier this year, because you can probably explain it better than I can, but it's kind of a weird rule on where the day lines up.
Yes. So it's not in line with the federal holiday. So what happened was when the bill got over to the Senate, there were senators who wanted the holiday to fall on a Friday or a Monday. And so I made provisions in the bill to have it on a Friday or Sunday as a state holiday. And it's my fault. I didn't realize the impact and didn't look at the impact that it was going to have. And so then I've had different government entities, local entities and businesses and families who came back and said to me, this is problematic. This is problematic, especially families, because I've had people reach out and say, hey, my husband or my wife has this day off and I have this day off and I can't celebrate it with my family. And so I did try to amend that this past session. It failed. It passed out of the House and House committee and out of the House. But unfortunately, it did not make it out of Senate committee because there were senators who wanted to keep it the same. And so much to the dismay of a lot of people. And so my plans are to open the bill file back again and maybe explain a little bit more the impact, the business impact and the impact that it is having on the community and the need to bring it back in line with the federal holiday.
Yeah. Not to make this conversation overly political, but we don't always have the chance to talk with lawmakers kind of outside of our area. You've been in the Utah legislature for around a decade now. I'm just curious what changes you've seen at the legislature, but also just with your district. What are you focused on accomplishing going forward?
You know, particularly in my district, District 21 is the northwest side of Salt Lake City. And so we have all of these great things in my district. We have the State Fair Park, where we hold the State Fair. We're currently looking at, the Miller family is looking at investing on the west side. You know, we're looking at Major League Baseball, the possibility of hosting a team here, which is very, very exciting. But we also have the Inland Port in this area, mm-hmm. and we also have the prison. And it's one of the areas where there's still land where we still have room to grow. And so a lot of what I am doing, what I'm working on, one of the major things I'm working on is services in this community, for the local community. So, for example, in my community, there's a medical emergency, people in this community have to leave out. They have to go to the east side in order to be able to get medical services. So one of the things I am looking at is how do we keep people in the community and able to get that service in this community. So that's one of the things I'm looking at on the west side. Great community. I invite anybody, if you ever in Salt Lake City, to come over to our community. Some of the best restaurants, best people that you would ever want to meet in the world. They're really good people. And so, yes, I have been serving since 2015. Loved the area, originally from New Orleans. Loved the area, loved Utah.
Yeah, and just to break down that Miller proposal a little bit, you're generally supportive of the idea of putting an MLB team in that kind of whole development project there?
I am. I am in support of it. I am looking at long-term what it's going to mean for our community over here in this area. Yes, the district, there are some of my constituents do have some concerns about the impact that is going to have in the community, particularly on areas around transportation, what it's going to mean for property taxes, what is it going to mean for us. And so that was the reason why when the bill passed, I was one of the ones fighting to make sure that someone from our local community have a voting voice on that board. And so they're able, I'll make sure our community is represented so that we are looking at those issues from the eyes of residents that live on the west side.
Lastly, Sandra, I did want to ask just about, we obviously saw some horrible political violence in Minnesota over the weekend where state lawmakers were targeted. As someone who's, you know, spent a decade now in public office in the state house, just what was your reaction to that?
Oh, my gosh. It tore my heart out. It tore my heart out to see, because the people who choose to serve, we do this because we have a love and passion for people. We love people, and we want to make a difference in our communities. And so to see those individuals targeted, it tore my heart out, but it's also scary as an elected official, because then I started wondering about my own safety and the safety of my colleagues up at the Capitol. Mm-hmm. And how do we go about securing our safety and making sure that this is not happening in Utah? And so we have had conversation with our security up at the Capitol and getting tips and on how do we go about being safe. But my heart goes out to the family of those legislators that were the one that died and the one that is still recovering, him and his wife.
Well, I'm about out of time, Sandra, but anything else you want to mention?
Nothing. I just hope people get out and enjoy today, enjoy Juneteenth. There's several events that's going on today. And so just kind of get out and enjoy today with your family and with your community and your friends.
Yeah. Any fun events going down in Salt Lake City you want to highlight?
Sure. Today I'm going to be headed over to the Gateway. There's an event going on over there, a celebration going on at the Gateway. I believe it starts around noon today, so I'll be going over there. And tonight, the Utah Black Democrat Caucus is hosting an event. You can go online and find it. But they're hosting an event later on tonight, and the theme is Western event. So I'm looking forward to that.
All right. We've been speaking with Utah House Rep Sandra Hollins of Salt Lake City. Thanks so much for joining us today and giving us the time.
Okay, thanks for having me.
I'm now joined in studio by a trio from the Park City School District. I've got Park City School District Superintendent of Schools, Lindsay Huntsman, Board Vice President Nick Hill, and Business Administrator Randy Upton. How's it going today?
Good morning.
Great. Good morning.
Kick things off with the budget. The board approved a $248 million budget Tuesday. One of you kind of want to break down the main components of what makes that up?
Yeah, Randy? I can do that. Sure. $248 million, it's a little bit elevated, obviously, because we've still got construction projects going on. That's all the funds included in our operation fund. We're $118 million that we're anticipating. We're aggressive on expenses and have gone through and, built a budget that we think the board was happy with. And under Superintendent Huntsman's leadership, we were able to accomplish a lot of things.
Yeah, and I have notes here that say, so the board opted not to raise taxes and has been absorbing positions to make up funds. So kind of, is that still ongoing? And can you kind of just talk about the financial picture going forward?
Yeah, I think we're set for where we're going to start the new year. We cut out about $4 million in salaries and benefits. And of course, we gave a 6% increase, which totaled $5.8 million. So we had other cuts other places. But yeah, I think in the future, we're going to look for further efficiencies. Mm-hmm. And as we move forward, and that may result in, as attrition happens, not renewing contracts or those kind of things.
I can't imagine that the board desire to avoid tax increases or the community desire to avoid tax increases is going to change. Obviously, it's only part of that we actually control. But as far as we can control that, we'll do our best to keep that to a minimum and avoid as much as possible. And we're thrilled that Randy and Lindsay were able to pull that together this year.
Do you want to add anything?
Yeah, I'll just add that this is a multi-year process. So as people choose to pursue other opportunities or retirements happen, we'll continue to look at those positions that may not be student-facing. The last thing we want to do is absorb a position that may have a negative impact on our students.
Yeah, and also part of that budget, I assume, is this new sports complex. I understand the board kind of set a max price for that. So can you kind of talk about how that plays into the budget?
Yeah, so that's included in our capital fund.
Yeah.
It's $38 million that was approved. So we've got money in there. Obviously, built the budget next year with not spending much this year as we're kind of getting things going. You don't see any earthwork going on over there right now. So we'll probably be, the next couple weeks or first part of July before we see any kind of expenses come from that. But that is built into the capital budget as well as Ecker and Park City High School, which those projects are finishing up and will go into the next fiscal year a little bit as far as cost is concerned and buildings. And so that's built into the capital budget as well.
Yeah, and just with the sports facility, what can we expect in terms of the short term, in terms of the projects?
I think in the next couple of weeks, you're going to start to see some construction fencing going up and some activity over there in that open space between Treasure Mountain Junior High School and the district office.
So is the goal to get some fields out there by the fall? Or?
Our hope is that our spring sports will be able to play on those turf fields spring of 2026.
Okay. I understand last month there were some issues with making sure the turf fields were PFAS free. Is that, has there been any change there?
We are still working with the city. We're hopeful we're going to be able to resolve that and move forward.
And that, can you talk about the turf? Because I understand that's a big deal just because, I guess, is just snow easier to remove? That's kind of the gist of it.
It is. Historically, our spring sports, baseball and softball, have not been able to host home games because of the snow removal on a dirt field. It's less than ideal to play on a dirt field and grass. So with an artificial turf, it'll make it much easier to remove the snow and allow them to have an increased number of home games.
Yeah. Moving on, the board voted to open enrollment for K through 5 out of boundary students this coming school year. I guess to start, can someone just explain what open enrollment means?
Yeah, so what that means is students who don't reside within the Park City School District boundaries in grades K through 5 will now be able to apply for open enrollment, which hasn't happened for several years here within our school district.
Is that in part just due to the kind of gradual decline in enrollment?
It's declining enrollment, as well as we received information that enrollment projections in Summit County is expected to see a decline of approximately 451 students ages 5 to 14 over the next 5 years. So we felt like this is ideal and appropriate timing to open enrollment for students entering K through 5.
Is that analysis just kind of based on population demographics and just kind of the forecasting? Because I understand we're kind of an older area.
Yes, so they're forecasting for Summit County as well as Wasatch County, and Randy can speak to specifics on that forecasting.
Yeah, Jeff over at the county provided us that information, does a great job with that data, and it's the same thing in Wasatch County. They're looking at ages 5 to 14 over the next 5 years, a decrease of 650 kids. Yeah.
Even in Wasatch.
Yeah, just that age group.
Yeah, and Lindsay, can you talk a bit about how open enrollment works if a family is interested in going through that process?
Yeah, so applications will open June 23rd, which is Monday, and seats will be filled on a first-come, first-served basis based on grade level and school capacity. Each school and grade level will have a maximum number of seats that they can fill. We are going to be sending communication out later today to all our local media partners, as well as our family and our communities, to explain that process in more detail.
And then is there any kind of hard deadline where people need to get that in?
No, it's kind of open until filled.
Open enrollment.
Our system will timestamp the applications as they come in, and then we will review those on a weekly basis.
So I was told a parent at the board meeting on Tuesday expressed concerns about an incident that happened at one of the elementary schools. She said parents weren't informed and expressed some concerns about transparency. Can any of you provide any background on that incident?
Yeah, that parent shared some important feedback during public comment about how we communicate with families during sensitive situations. While I can't talk about specific personnel matters, I have followed up with those families, inviting them to come in and let's have a conversation about how best we can move forward, as well as improve our own internal procedures. So I'm hopeful that I will get a response and we can schedule a time to have some dialogue on ways in which we can improve as a district in terms of communication, especially when it comes to families and supporting them through difficult moments.
Yeah, and with sensitive situations like that, what's kind of the normal protocol to go about things like that?
You know, each situation is different, and we have privacy laws that we have to respect, and as well as maintaining that privacy of individuals that may be involved, whether it's an employee or a student. And we'll continue to revisit those and improve areas where we feel like we can get better and share information that maybe in the past we haven't shared with families while we're in the midst of those investigations.
Yeah. Next, the board adopted a new military leave policy. What does this consist of, and what are the guidelines kind of listed out in this policy?
Yeah, so we didn't have a formal policy in place specific to military policy or military service, I should say. With this policy, we now ensure the employees who serve in the military are fully protected and treated equitably in line with federal laws such as the USERRA Act.
I did want to ask, is the teacher's contract coming up anytime soon? I thought it was about 2 or 3 years ago the last agreement was struck in terms of...
Yeah, so this we are entering school year 25-26 will be year three of the three-year compensation package that was passed. So with House Bill 267 now being stayed, we can negotiate versus meet and confer. We'll start that process in early spring of 2026. We did that earlier this school year.
Gotcha. And so the fate of that state law, can you talk a bit about how that plays a role potentially, depending on where that goes?
Yeah, so it'll go on the ballot in the fall of 2026. Right now, we can continue to do our existing practice in terms of negotiating with our employees. If it were to not pass, we would have to move back to a meet and confer with our employees.
Is that just one-on-one separately rather than like organized negotiation?
It would be with our employee groups. So we have PCCEA, EIG, and PCEA. So we would meet with their leadership and have conversation and dialogue.
Yeah. Anything else you guys want to highlight from the board meeting Tuesday or anything else going on in the district?
Yeah, I think just celebrating the class of 2025 on June 6th, we had 401 graduates, $15 million in scholarship money was awarded to that class. 74% are attending four-year colleges. The average ACT score of the class of 2025 was 23.4. That's huge when the national average is 19.4. And 77% of the class of 25 earned college credit while in high school through our concurrent enrollment program, and 17% were first-gen students. So just really celebrating the achievements that that senior class was able to attain while they were students at the Park City School District.
What does summer look like for you all? Do you get a break?
We do not. We certainly can take vacation, but Randy...
We take a break from the board meeting for July. That's about it.
But we're busy planning for next year with the leadership changes and the new teams coming together. We want to make sure that we start the school year on the right foot, positive, fresh start for all of our employees, new teachers, administrators. So we're working to ensure that's in place before August rolls around.
Yeah, just a personal curiosity. How do you all handle summer school? What is kind of the setup at the Park City School District for that?
Yeah, so it's officially begun. We're supporting students with extended learning opportunities and academic reinforcement across multiple grade levels. They also take field trips to expose them to things that they may not otherwise be exposed to during their time with us.
Well, anything else you all want to mention?
We're looking forward to moving on in a fresh start come August. We're excited about the things that we've been able to accomplish during this recent school year, 24-25, but even more excited about the things that are on the horizon for Park City School District and the greater Park City community.
Thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with Park City School District Superintendent of Schools, Lindsay Huntsman, Board Vice President Nick Hill, and Randy Upton, the Business Administrator at the district. I'm now joined in studio by the Executive Director of the Park City Sailing Association, Scott Vermaris. How's it going today?
Awesome. Good morning.
Good morning. I know we have you on somewhat regularly, but just as a reminder to our listeners, tell us a bit about what the Park City Sailing Association is.
Yeah, so we are a nonprofit community sailing program at the Jordan L. We offer all things sailing for all people.
How long have you been around?
Since 2008, and it's just been onward and upward since then.
And what kind of programs do you offer?
So we offer so many. When I say sailing for all people in all ages, I really mean it. So I'll kind of list a few, actually. Yeah. So Learn to Sail for All Ages. Right now, our junior sailing program is up and running and thriving. We strive to see 500 kids come through the program in a season. We're working to get to those numbers, but we have hundreds of kids come through anywhere from ages 5 to 17. We have a junior race team as well, so kids are out learning in different size boats depending on their age and kind of where they are in their development. So yeah, junior sailing, adult learn to sail, private lessons, group lessons, things like that. We have an access program, so people who are members can come down and use boats whenever they want. You can just sign out a boat online, come down, help yourself to the boat, and go sailing. We make sure that you have the skills and the confidence to do that safely. We have race programs. We race on Tuesdays and Thursday nights, so we'll be out there racing keelboats tonight. It's going to be a breezy night. It'll be really exciting. Multiple different fleets of one design boats, meaning that they're all the same and equally matched. And an outreach program. I really like talking about the outreach program. I'm super passionate about that side of things, just like everything else. But so the outreach program serves not only community partners like visiting camps, but also veteran sailing programs. We do a lot of adaptive and therapeutic work. Yeah, it's just a really great opportunity to, I guess, express or utilize the magic of sailing to help people.
Yeah, and this is all obviously going down at the Jordan L.
Yeah, we operate at the Jordan L. We have an amazing space there. We have a building that we can operate out of thanks to the park that we share with that space, and we're expanding our boatyard right now. And we've built a mooring field, so all of our boats are moored kind of in the cove there in the northwest corner near adjacent to our little personal watercraft ramp area. So it's quite nice. Yeah, it's a great venue for sailing. We get really good wind. Mountain sailing sometimes is notorious for being really kind of like inconsistent wind, but we get these thermals that come up over the Heber Valley, and it's so good. So we're very, very lucky to have what we have.
What do you mean by thermals?
So thermals, so when the Salt Lake Valley heats up, the cold water will draw breeze up from the valley. And in the evenings when we get a temperature change, the wind will go back the opposite direction. So when we race in the evenings, we'll get wind kind of coming from Deer Valley, kind of down over Highway 40, just basically from the north. So really good breeze for mountain sailing, which is an important factor for us.
Yeah, no, I assume. Where did you learn to sail? How did you learn to sail?
That's a good question. So I grew up in Ohio, Great Lakes, Cleveland area. Yeah. Sailing with my family was a family thing. And I went to sailing camp when I was about 8 or 9.
So some Lake Erie?
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah. Mentor, Ohio is where I grew up sailing. And I went to sailing camp when I was about 8 or 9 years old. And so it kind of became, at that point, my thing, not just something that my parents were taking me to do. And it was something that really captured my learning style. It really helped me develop as a human being, and it became a lifelong passion.
Yeah, and then what led you out to Utah?
Ski industry. I also work in the ski industry, and I was working for a wilderness therapy program that brought me specifically to Salt Lake and then migrated to Park City eventually.
Yeah, and can you talk a bit more just about the climate at the Jordanelle and what... I assume it presents some challenges, but also, you know, some good opportunities for sailing.
Yeah. Sounds like you know a thing or two about what we deal with. So the Jordanelle is this just beautiful other, like, world that you step into. Like, absolutely. I can't wait to drive down there after this. You know, you get down there and it's just gorgeous. And the temperature is a little bit cooler being near the water and just feeling the breeze. It's amazing. So we've got about 5 square miles of sailing area. Our main sailing area is about 1 square. So we've got a good amount of room. We operate at the personal watercraft ramp, and there's a public dock there in our building and, you know, plenty of parking. One thing that we don't necessarily have is we don't work at the marina, which is kind of around the other side. We commute out to our boats on moorings, or we're launching boats off of the ramp, but that's not totally untypical. As the water levels change, we might have a longer ramp or like a different scenario in terms of how we manage things. But the past few years, the water levels have been high, kind of like where we want them to be, thanks to the snow, thanks to the way that they're managing water levels. So it works out really, really well. And you know, a lot of people don't know that we have this going on down there. I know a lot of people know about the Jordanelle. If you haven't been down there, check it out. It's beautiful. And a lot of people don't know that we exist down there either. And so, like, I kind of have to pinch myself daily when I look around. I'm like, oh my gosh, we have sailing right here in this ski town. It's amazing.
Yeah. Definitely need to get to the summer sailstice event. I guess this is an annual thing you all do, happening on Saturday at the Jordanelle. What's going on?
Yeah, okay, so this weekend we want to invite people down to come check out our program. The Summer Sailstice is a global event that hosted by sailing organizations all around the Very world. Cool. Everyone can do it in their own way, but it's a celebration of sailing. And for us, we want to invite people in to try it out. Come get in a boat, come sailing with us, come meet people, meet board members, meet staff. Free barbecue, games and things like that, but primarily just like focusing on sailing. So boat rides for all ages. So kids can get in and try some of the junior boats that we use for camp. Adults can get into some of the bigger boats. We'll make whatever happen within what we can do. But it'll be really fun. So yeah, free food and gear swap. And it's from, 11 to 3. So we'll be down there all day. And we just really want to not only engage our current members, but we want to invite people to come meet us and try it out.
Yeah, and I know you might have already, you already kind of mentioned it, but where exactly in Jordanelle are you guys based at if people are looking for it at the park?
Ah, that's helpful. Yeah. So you come into the Jordanelle and you're going to go to the personal watercraft ramp and personal you can follow watercraft. Signs that say Sail PC, which is sort of our nickname for branding. But it's essentially 2 rights and you'll head down towards the PWC personal watercraft ramp facing the dam.
For someone who maybe super interested in sailing, thinks it's super cool, but has never done it, what is the learning curve for someone who wants to get into this?
Okay, yeah. So I get asked this question a lot by adults wondering, okay, like how many lessons do I have to take before I can sail on my own and join the Access program? And sometimes that has to do with aptitude, the amount of maybe studying you do at home by reading some textbooks. It is very experience-based as well as theoretical. I'd say, so what I recommend for adults is they join group lessons, and you can take a 4-pack of group lessons and kind of see where you're at. Maybe add a couple private lessons to that. Or maybe do 8 total lessons, do 2 4-packs, and you kind of get there to where you can get enough experience to get into a boat on a day when the wind is manageable. and then just go practice.
Yeah.
It's like being on a bike or skiing. You need time in a boat to really gain the confidence. Like, experience is mostly how you get there. And so we're there to help. We give guidance. We offer tips and lessons if you want a refresher. And we will point people in the right direction. We give textbooks for people when they take lessons. We try to break down the barriers to sailing. We try to make this an inclusive program, but we also try to show people that for the amount that you pay, a lot of places in the world, sailing is perceived as expensive and elitist. We're trying to make this accessible and affordable. So we will not only make these prices digestible, we're also going to pave the way to get you out sailing. That's the whole point. And for kids, depends on when you start, but there's no wrong time to start sailing. We're accepting teenagers who are doing Learn to Sail, and we're also starting kids at age 5. And, you know, it doesn't take too long. I think people think, well, it is a lifelong thing, and you never really totally plateau at sailing. Mm-hmm. You can totally get out sailing on your own and experiencing the joys. It doesn't take that long.
I'm about out of time, but for any people interested in learning more about the Park City Sailing Association, where can they go?
Yeah, please check out sailpc.org. Come down to the Jordan L and check us out. Come to the event this weekend. We are always welcome a phone call. We are just here to help. We really want to get people involved.
Yeah. Anything else you want to mention, Scott?
You know, it's just such a beautiful thing. And for fear of sounding cliche, sailing is so magical. Feeling the wind in your sails and being on the water, whether or not you've been doing it your whole life, you're doing it for the first time, like that feeling is incredibly therapeutic and very special. And I'm just so happy it's a part of my life, and I love sharing it with other people. So come join us.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming in today, and hope the event goes well on Saturday.
Thanks, Parker.
We've been speaking with Scott Vermaris. He's the executive director of the Park City Sailing Association. You've been listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. I'm Parker Malatesta. Thanks for tuning in on this Juneteenth holiday.